All right, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 101. We finally broke the century marker.
We did.
I am Jeff. I am joined, as always, by Chris.
That is me.
And Chris and I have both been, you know, it's been a while since we've done a regular episode, so we've kind of seen a bunch. We're going to pare it down to what we think is essential here to talk about. And we're going to start it off with new animated film, Moana, which Chris went and saw in theater. How was it, Chris?
It's okay.
It's just okay, huh?
Yeah, I didn't come away from it, and I know there's going to be other people that are like, "Oh, it was so fantastic." I did not come away from it feeling it was super awesome. Like I like it quite a bit, but when you compare it to like Zootopia and for me Finding Dory, like, doesn't quite reach that level. It's a more traditional Disney movie. It's a Disney musical, in fact, a princess movie, I guess, although she's not a princess. She's a chieftain's daughter. They actually make a joke about that at one point. So the Rock's character is this demigod Maui. And he's caused some shit in the past, and Moana has to kind of rectify that by returning this stone to this island to stop the evil curse that Maui kind of put on, and she needs Maui to do it. He needs to be the one that returns the stone, and I guess he calls her a princess at one point, and she kind of like chastises him for it, but... it's really a story about her, this demigod Maui, and then they have this like crazy chicken companion that's with them. Like, most of the movie is really just the three of them on a boat. Occasionally, like, there's something that goes on. And there's a lot of singing. I mean, it's a musical. There's a lot of singing about like wanting to get out of your comfort zone. Off of the island, get away, go explore. Like she wants to be an explorer. And it's okay. Like the Rock is, he's the Rock. I don't know. It's like, there's nothing particularly bad about it. I think the music is good. Like it's not, it doesn't hit me though, the same way that like Tangled did or even Frozen, which I liked. This is good. It's pretty. It's like, it has some catchy songs to it. But well,
that's something I wanted to actually ask you about, because you know it was Lin-Manuel Miranda. So like that got me more interested. And yeah, also the other thing is like, I think both of us would argue that Zootopia is like one of the best movies of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't think the music in that movie is very good at all. Like, I don't know. It's kind of
in Zootopia?
Yeah.
It's not. Like, the Zootopia music is not good. Like, that's just a good, solid film by itself. Yeah. Like, this is a movie that is pretty standard. Like,
it's like your standard Disney musical. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, really, you go back, you look at Frozen, it's not that much different. Like, that's still a pretty standard, you know, Disney musical as well. So is Tangled. This just kind of continues that, and it doesn't really try anything new. And visually, it's nice. It's just, there's like, the stakes are just kind of weird. Like, it's very centered around the Rock, and he's kind of a dick. Like, he doesn't. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Like, he's kind of like a nice character, but he's kind of an asshole. And he's not really likable, and that's like for the Rock, that's weird.
Well, I heard like his song that introduces him is called "You're Welcome."
Yeah, like I did all this stuff. Yeah, you're welcome. Like, yeah, it's kind of a cute little song, but like he's just kind of like this ass that doesn't want to take responsibility for anything that he's ever done, and she's trying to like chase after him to fix it, and there's no real villain. Like, it's just a quest. So that kind of hurts it as well. Like, you know, when there's a good bad guy to root against. Like,
yeah.
And again, like, this is just kind of like an adventure. Like, go out, find yourself, become an explorer, restore the island to its power. It's good. Don't get me wrong. Just not great. So,
and you have one of the most tepid responses to this that I've heard out there. Most everyone seems to love it.
Yeah, it's something about it just did not click with me. Great. Like, I think it's perfectly fine. But yeah, like, I think there are better animated movies out there. And it's certainly Zootopia is like at the top of that list right now. So,
yeah, as I was gonna say too, you are, you know, you're definitely a fan of like animated films as well. So it's not like it's not clicking because of that. That's weird. Have you seen Kubo and the Two Strings yet?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I will at some point this month to see it. So
yeah, but, it's on my like queue for Redbox. So I think it's coming very shortly, actually.
Yeah, Netflix has it for December 20th. I've heard nothing but great stuff about that. So we'll see. But for as far as Moana, what's your final verdict on that, man?
I'm gonna go with a 3.
Okay.
I mean, mileage is going to vary, but my kids really liked it, so maybe it just didn't like hit with me. I don't know. But there we go, Moana.
Well, I'll let you know once I finally see it. I've been busy as well. I haven't gone to the theater because here's something funny. I think I was like bitching last week or something about how like I don't get enough movies at my theater. That's true. Nothing about that has really changed. But I think I figured out why it was so like sparse lately. That's because my theater's been going through renovations. So that's probably why there's only been 4 movies. And as of right now, it's closed completely. It's been closed for like at least a week. Yeah, and it's not.
That it's sucks.
Up. Yeah. It's opening up on December 9th. So like, you know, week before Rogue One and all that. But it's going to be a lot nicer. We're going to have like reclined seats and like better food and all that. So let's hopefully better selection.
Yeah, they did that for the one theater I'm going to go see Rogue One at. They did that too. So you should enjoy that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I have not been in the theater lately, but I have been, you know, watching a bunch of stuff. Some of it old, some of it new. One of the new things I watched is a documentary called Tickled, which you've heard of, right? I was telling you about it earlier.
I'm actually interested in getting a chance to see it at some point.
I've been dying to see it since the summer when I was listening to the Slash Film Cast, and I forgot who had reviewed it on there, but he essentially said it was like one of the best documentaries ever made, and you know, like real, like just thrilling, like lots of twists and this and that. I'm like, God, I've been dying to see this. It, which is funny when you like hear the premise. So I finally broke down because it's been on demand. And I think it's on iTunes as well as Amazon.
Right.
Purchase, not rental. So it's like, somewhere between $10 and $15. I watched it on demand for $12.99. as a purchase, so now I own this fucking documentary. But I finally, like, it was last night I broke down and watched it. So what it's about, it's this New Zealand reporter named David Ferrier.
I don't
know how you would say it, but he does like quirky profiles, like, you know, like, hey, look at this weird person, like what they do for a living, or you know, weird things like that. And, he's searching around on the internet one day and he comes across an international tickling competition video. And it's like this guy, like an athlete guy, like strapped down to a bed being tickled by other dudes. And he's just like, what the hell is this? And so he finds out like the company that runs this tickling competition is called Jane O'Brien Media. And he sends them an email saying, hey, I saw that one of your international tickling competition videos. I would really like to like sit down with you and talk more about like whatever it is you're doing. I'm a reporter, blah, blah, blah. And the response he gets from that is that, like someone from Jane O'Brien Media emails him and is like, we don't want to do a sit down with you because you are homosexual and like all these like weird things like right. just like calling him names and you know you're biased media like just really though mainly picking on the fact that he's homosexual, which the movie never discusses whether he is or not, but like it's a very weird charge to come from this company that does these videos. Yeah. Or, yeah, this competition that like looks super gay. Like that's exactly what the reporter says. He's like, okay. Like that's weird right. because your tickling competition seems gay. And so this kind of gets him interested in what the hell is Jane O'Brien Media and what is this tickling competition all about? And the movie kind of chronicles him trying to get to the bottom of what it is. And I don't want to spoil any of it, but it goes very weird places. And it's creepy. Like it's just some of the footage in the movie is just creepy. It was just like watching these dudes getting tickled, like in almost like a sexual way where it's like, it makes you uncomfortable to watch. But here's what I'll say is that I think that the guy who reviewed it for Slash Filmcast did the movie somewhat of a disservice because I went in with, I don't know, I just expect him to be blown away. And, right.
Well, I mean, I guess you call something one of the best documentaries ever. Like,
yeah, I'm a big documentary fan. Like, I know how powerful and good they can be. And I've seen way better documentaries this year. And I think a big problem with this is, like, the guy who reviewed this was like, you won't believe the places that this goes and blah, blah, blah. And I predicted what was going to happen every step of the way. I didn't find it, like, so outrageous.
Right.
Like, I was like, okay, so it's probably this and it's probably that. Like, this is probably what's happening. And every time I said that, I ended up being right. I was like, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm that super smart. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think people who are like familiar with the internet and trolling and just, I don't know. I think the people that are like familiar with the world that is out there right now are not going to be completely surprised by every turn that this takes. But that said, like it is fascinating through the whole thing. And it is, like, it's definitely a very interesting story that gets more and more interesting as it goes on. So, I mean, it's definitely a recommend, but, like, it's not one where I'm like, you should, like, I'm wait until you could rent it, I would say.
Okay.
Own it digitally like me, because, I don't know. I mean, unless you're fine with paying $13 to see the movie, which I finally, like, in my head was like, dude, that's how much you would pay to go see it in the theater. You would have went to see it in the theater if you could, so whatever, screw it. But yeah, like it's very, very good, but it's not like life changing. And there are like, you know, I could name two or three documentaries off the top of my head this year that I thought were better. So
cool. I do want to check it out. So
yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, and of course I'm like tempted to want to say more, but you know, I don't want to spoil the surprise. But I'll give it a 4 out of 5.
All right. I guess
what we else, should Chris?
Probably talk about the other movie that I saw that was in theaters. I wanted to see Arrival. I wanted to go see Arrival, or even maybe Doctor Strange. My wife wanted to see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I mean, I like Harry Potter. It's fine. Actually, I think Harry Potter's better than fine for a lot of it, but. this movie is just fine. Maybe not even just fine. It might be a little bit less than fine. It's kind of dull, like for a movie that comes, you know, spinning off of a series that had 8 films that, I don't know, there's varying degrees of excitement there. And this is a movie about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. There aren't too many Fantastic Beasts, and it's in like the dull area of New York. Like, Harry Potter took place in, well, I mean, like, there were the fantastical locations, like Hogwarts, and but even when it was, like, in the real world, it took place in this, like, fantastic London, like...
Yeah.
This takes place in New York in, like, 1920s. Like, it's kind of dull and boring, and... Yeah. Like, Eddie Redmayne, pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. When does Harry Potter take place then? Is it supposed to be present day or
Harry Potter takes place in the present day? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this takes place well before then. Well before then. They mention, like, I think Dumbledore is mentioned, but like nothing else is really from that time period. So I believe Dumbledore is going to make an appearance. Like they're planning on this being a 5-film series, which seems crazy to me, but yeah, it's just kind of dull. Like, and when you have like a super huge big blockbuster movie, like they shouldn't be boring.
Yeah.
Eddie Redmayne is fine. Like he's like this weird quirky guy who has a bunch of beasts in his suitcase. Who else is in this? Scott Goldman. No, it's trying to see who the his buddy is. He has Dan Fogler. He's actually pretty good. I don't know what else he's been in, but he's pretty decent in this. He's kind of like the comic relief, where he plays the straight guy, but because like everything else is magic, even though like Eddie Redmayne's character is like the quirky, weird magic guy, like Dan Fogler's kind of like us and like, oh shit, like what the fuck is going on? Like, so he's kind of like the, you know, that sort of character. And then the two women in the movie, Catherine Waterson, she plays like this detective that works for the Ministry of Magic in New York. And Allison Sudol plays her sister, and they're both they're fun. Like they're fun characters to have, but they're not given anything to do. And the big bad guy is Colin Farrell. And he's pretty sinister, but then it like kind of twists and it ends up he's actually Johnny Depp, because Johnny Depp is this fugitive that is like hidden himself as Colin Farrell. And I don't know, the end battle is like against it's kind of like an invisible entity. Like, it's like, this is a big budget movie. What's going on here? Yeah. So I don't recommend it at all. There's better movies out there. If I'm being generous, I'll say it's a 3. But if I think about it more, the way I just described it, I have it listed as a 3. When I left the theater, I was like, "Yeah, that was okay." Now, like, I'm a couple weeks removed from it, and I'm thinking it's worse than even when I left the theater. So
you're talking yourself out of that 3.
Yeah. Yeah. So. There's that.
Comes as no surprise to me. Well, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that. I thought it looked like shit, and I had no interest in seeing it. But I've never seen a Harry Potter movie, so
okay.
What do I know? But, well.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I guess, speaking of better documentaries, this is not going to be a full review, today I started watching OJ Made in America.
Okay.
Which is it's not the TV show that I think it was on FX.
Right. That was by the guy who does American Horror Story. Was that American Crime Story or something like that?
It's like The People versus OJ, I think that's what it's called. That's with like John Travolta and all them. This is a ESPN documentary. It's weird because they both came out around the same time. And it is in five parts, I think totaling roughly 8 hours.
Okay.
So it is by far like
chunky.
The longest. Yeah, like most 30 for 30 documentaries are, you know, standard movie length. This is like super in depth. I think the closest thing I would compare it to is from last year, which is Making a Murderer. Just like, you know, we're gonna turn this into a whole season and go in depth on all of this. And like I said, I'm not all the way through it. I started watching it today. I watched the first two parts.
Okay.
Part one details OJ's career, both in college and in the NFL, and then a little bit, you know, post NFL, and it ends with him meeting Nicole while he's married to someone else.
Okay.
And part two kind of details, you know, what he did post retirement, and their relationship, like him, he and Nicole's relationship. And it actually, part two ends with her like officially breaking up with him for who knows how many times she tried to, but like it was a very abusive relationship and she finally, you know, broke it off. And that's at the end of part two. So after like 3+ hours of watching this, that's where it's gotten to. So it's very well done. And it not only tells OJ's story, but it also puts it in context of what's going on in America during that time.
Okay.
Which, you know, that's part of the title, OJ, Made in America. So it's like,
right.
It's like, it's very thorough. So it's like, it goes on long stretches where you're like, what the hell does this have to do with OJ at all? Like in the second episode, there's like a good 30, 45 minute stretch where they're talking about Rodney King and the riots that happened in LA after that. And they don't even mention OJ for like a good chunk of that, like at all, like until that whole part's over. And you're like, I know they're going to, you know, they're going to tie it all. Like OJ Simpson's trial is a part of American history. And it all ties in, you know, you can't just say it happened in this vacuum. So I really appreciate what they're doing with that.
Right.
I especially appreciated like in the first two episodes how they paint him as like the super likable guy who's basically an asshole. It's like really weird. Like it's a complex thing to try to explain to the viewer. Like
he has a lot of charisma, but he's actually like a dick.
Yeah, but also he's a dick because, you know, he's coming up at a time at USC in the late 60s when the Watts riots are happening, like, right outside of where he's playing football. And he has nothing to say about it, like, ever. And, like, you know, you had people like Muhammad Ali at the time who were, like, making stances on stuff that were, like, trying to fight for civil rights. And OJ's position was, like, I don't care about any of that. I've made it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, anytime anyone would ask him, like, what's like to be a black person in America, or, like, you know, why don't you stand up for black people, or this and that, he'd just be like, I'm not black, I'm OJ. You know, I walk into a room, and people love me. He
transcends that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, and he was one of the first big, like, black celebrities that white America embraced, and they embraced him because he doesn't embrace, you know, the fact that he's black, really. Like, he likes to pretend, as a lot of, like, white people would, that, you know, racism is over and done with, right?
Right, and for him it probably was, because he was...
OJ. In a way, yeah. Yeah, because he's charming and he's rich, and what does he care, right?
Right.
So, it does a really good job of setting that up, and I'm hoping that where they're going to go with it is to say, once he got arrested for murder, all of a sudden he thought he was black again. Because, like, that was part of the trial, was him saying, like, this is racist, the LAPD is racist, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And, which is just funny, because he was never by the side of the civil rights movement throughout his career or after. I don't know, dude. I mean, that's just what, you know, is in the first two episodes. And
it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really, really liking it so far. I started watching it because I've been seeing it pop up on a lot of top 10 lists for movies of the year, which is weird because I wouldn't even know if, like, I would not be inclined. Like,
miniseries or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I would be like, as TV, or, yeah, you know, like, at the, yeah, it's TV or slash miniseries because I mean that's what it is. But like, I guess a lot of people loved it so much they're like, no, that's going to top 10. You know, so
okay.
I was like, all right, I'm gonna check it out. So I sat through the first two. If I didn't have work tomorrow, I'd probably sit here and
watch
it all night. It's that good. Yeah, it's like. It's on demand, so you know, if you have ESPN or you have cable, you can watch it. So
yeah, I might have to check that out if I get a chance.
I know. It's busy.
It's a bad time of the season right now.
Yeah.
Especially for us. Again.
Yeah. What else did you want to get to here?
I guess we want to touch on one more here. I saw Independence Day Resurgence.
Classic.
Yeah. Wow, what a shit show that movie is. I mean, looking back, the original Independence Day, probably not a great movie. Like, it's fun. It's, like, dumb fun. Shit blows up real well in that movie. Roland Emmerich has kind of made a career of blowing shit up real well.
It's a fun Roland Emmerich movie, basically. Yeah. Like, he's done like I really enjoyed 2012. I know it doesn't have like the didn't have the impact that Independence Day did, but big dumb fun movies.
He hasn't really had the impact since then, I guess. Like I don't know if there's really a movie since Independence Day that's really hit big for him. I mean, he's made some movies I like after I like The Patriot, like The Day After Tomorrow. 2012.
You like The Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah, I like the I like the concept of like I like the idea of it. Like, it's not a good movie, but
I like 2012. I don't like that movie. I thought was dull as hell.
I love the idea of like an ice age overtaking us and everyone freezing to death. I don't know. It's terrible. Wow, they have Independence Day 3 announced. That's terrible.
Yeah.
I'm looking at IMDb. It is an announced movie. Maybe it got canceled after Independence Day Resurgence. But anyway, Independence Day Resurgence. It is a movie. It brings back Jeff Goldblum. Bill Pullman is in it. Will Smith is not in it. They kill him off screen before the movie starts. He dies in a training accident as a pilot, which is kind of goofy to me. Like, this is basically
the guy who saved us.
Yeah, he's the guy who saved us, the best pilot. Like, that's why he went up there. And it kind of follows the same thing, like where it's, we have to find a way to weaken this, and because this time a bigger ship has come and is going to fuck us up. But there is this weird thing that we shoot out of the sky that had come to protect us and help us. I don't know. It's fucking wonky as fuck. Like, it's all over the place. Bill Pullman is starting to go crazy. Like, his President Whitmore character, he's starting to have, like, dementia. And he's not the president anymore, obviously. Like, they've you know, voted somebody else in. But this movie,
they didn't make him permanent president.
He's not the king. Like, no, he's a – Sella Ward is actually the president, I guess. But she dies pretty early on, which it all falls then to William Fichtner. He becomes the president. He plays a general earlier on in the film, and everybody else dies. They blow up Washington like completely this time, and everybody's dead. So then they have to kind of team together. Jeff Goldblum as like the doctor. His dad is in it again. The guy who played his dad. I don't remember who it was, but then it's like Liam Hemsworth, Jesse Usher. I don't really know who he is, and this other chick that she's Whitmore's Micah Monroe. She plays Bill Pullman's daughter in the movie, and it's really about the three of them saving the world this time. Jeff Goldblum, like. But the special effects are terrible. Like, I remember in, like, Independence Day, like, seeing it when it came out. I think it was, like, 96.
96 or 95, yeah.
Yeah, like the special effects weren't great, but, like, they blew up shit real well. Like,
oh, they were at the time. That was the main thing. Like, it was impressive.
Maybe it was. Maybe, like, I recently watched it and was like, this isn't that good, but it's also been 20 years, so I don't know. Like, that movie was fun. This movie's not fun. Like, there's... And maybe some of it is like the special effects just aren't, you know, they don't hit as hard anymore because every movie looks good. Every movie has great
effects.
Like, and so like a stupid movie about aliens coming, like what the fuck do we need that for? Star Wars came out last year and it was fucking awesome. Like,
yeah.
we don't need a dumb sci-fi movie to kind of fill that void. We have like good sci-fi movies that have come out, and Star Trek Beyond came out earlier this year. That's a better movie. Like, there's just better sci-fi films out there, and this one just seems goofy by comparison. Like, and not in a good way.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's okay. Like, there's a space for goofy, but like,
yeah, there certainly is. It's just this doesn't hit the mark. Like, it's just really it's dumb, and it doesn't seem to get why the original Independence Day was fun. Like.
Well, that's the main thing too. Is you're saying this one is just not fun? So yeah, you know, there's your.
It's like they're trying to be fun.
There's your tipping point.
Doesn't hit it. So they like miss the mark real bad with it. It's a bad movie. I would say stay away if you can.
How many stars are you gonna assign to that?
I'll go with 2. Like, it's watchable. Okay. I watched the entire thing.
Didn't fall asleep.
Yeah, no, I didn't fall asleep. Which, mind you, I did fall asleep watching Fantastic Beasts. I dozed off in that movie. That could be extenuating circumstances there, but all right. So, what else? What else did you hit up? So I think that's all it right, for me.
We both kind of had a bunch of stuff, and there's more stuff that we'll hold off till next time, I guess. But there's one thing I want to touch on. I've been watching a bunch of like classic. I've just been rewatching some older movies lately, like, and a bunch of them are because my girlfriend has not seen them. Like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, she never saw.
Okay.
So I was like, what? That's getting added to the queue. You watch The Wrestler. Both of those I think are easy 5-star, just like,
sure.
Great movies. One of them that has been on my queue forever since before Halloween. I wanted to watch it during the Halloween season, but it was always very long wait on Netflix. Was The Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
Which finally showed up this week. So apparently whoever had the disc returned it finally after 2 months. And so we got to watch a movie for Halloween here in Christmas season. And I don't know. I wanted to bring it up because I was stunned by just how good it actually is. Like, it's better than I remembered it.
Okay.
Like, watching The Devil's Rejects, you would think that Rob Zombie would go on to do great things. Like, really, dude. Like, you got to see it again because it's his direction, like, his directing in it is so confident. And just so assured and knows what it's doing. And it's super, super stylish, dude. And it's got this great 70s classic rock soundtrack to it. And just 70s pop and stuff too. Like, they got like Fooled Around and Fell in Love, that song in there. And like, I was just like, what the fuck? Like, I can't believe this is as good as it is and is as fun as it is. When it's a really grim, like, you know, violent horror movie, that's like, it's just so weird. It's quite an accomplishment because they are all very horrible, you know, killers. Like, but the actors who play them have such charisma that you're like almost rooting for this family of killers in it. All three of them, like Sid Haig, Sherry Moon, and Bill Moseley are just fantastic in it, especially Bill Moseley. Like, that guy, like, he just steals every scene that he's in. And it's for like this very despicable and horrible, like I said, violent movie.
Right.
Just between their acting and Rob Zombie's like very confident directing, like they just somehow pull it off where you're like rooting for this band of criminals who have just like murdered tons of people. And on top of it, you have like William Forsythe as the sheriff who's trying to chase them down. That's basically, I forgot what the whole story of it was. It was basically a sequel to House of a Thousand Corpses, but you don't need to see the first movie. And it just picks up with the cops finding this family of killers, and they escape, and the movie is them getting chased. And yeah, so you have William Forsythe as the sheriff chasing them down, and he's losing his goddamn mind trying to catch them, and just going batshit crazy and giving crazy speeches, and I don't know, dude. It's just a fun fucking movie. At the time, I remember liking, and I've always said it's from like, you know, the one movie Rob Zombie did that was good. I'm going to go a little bit higher and say it's the one movie Rob Zombie did that was like bordered on greatness. Like, whatever spark he had there, I wish he would find it again.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what is wrong with that guy anymore. Like, or maybe he just fluked into it.
I think I remember at the time when it came out, I want to say it was like Ebert's review of it said, this is a movie made by a filmmaker who thinks that they're never going to be able to make another movie again. And that's how it feels. It's like he's throwing everything against the wall, like everything he believes in terms of aesthetic, in terms of horror, like what he loves. He like poured his fucking heart into it because he thought he wouldn't be able to finance another movie. And he pulled it off. Like, and I think everything he's done since has been kind of lazy. Maybe other than, what the hell is that Salem one?
Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem, yeah. Like that one, like, you know, he was trying to do a little, he was trying, right? But like with the Halloween movies, it doesn't really feel like he was trying. And from what the sounds of what you said about 31, it doesn't sound like he was really doing much.
No.
Go back and watch Devil's Rejects, man. You probably have it in your DVD collection or something somewhere. It's surprisingly good. Like, just honestly, dude, it's like you could, like, if you put that in front of me and told me Tarantino did it, I'd be like, yeah. And some of it is him kind of aping stuff that Tarantino would do. But at the end of the day, it is pure zombie. Like, these are hillbilly fucking killers saying right. Fucking shit and cunt every two other words, and it's like all the things that you would criticize him for, but done with such heart and such conviction that you're like, damn, he pulled it off. You're like, that's like the one time he did it. So I don't know, any horror fans, I'd love to hear like other people's thoughts on it, but yeah, I was surprised how well that holds up.
Cool.
You want to
briefly touch on Westworld?
I will hold it off.
Okay. I will try and watch it this week then, and
yeah,
be able to talk more in depth.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I could talk about it without spoilers, and essentially what I'll say without spoilers is that that show, I was very critical of it all along. I didn't think it was good, really. And I was worried that it wouldn't pay things off, that it was all about, like, solving the mystery and this and that. And holy shit, did they stick the landing. Like, everything pays off. Your questions are going to be answered. And it comes to such a satisfying end that it would be fine if that was it. Like, if it was just a miniseries and that was the end of it and there wasn't a season two, I feel like the story is over at the end of season one. And I don't need more, so... Get excited, Chris. Like, you're in for a treat.
I have four episodes left, so.
It really does pay off.
Cool.
So we'll talk about that next week. We'll talk about one that I just somehow forgot to bring up with you at all, but it is Yoga Hosers.
Oh, you did see Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, yes, I saw it. We'll talk about it. And on top of that, I will – hopefully, or I will have, I'll see Bad Moms, and then hopefully a movie called South Side with You, which is about Brock and Michelle's first date.
Okay.
So, that's what I got.
Interesting. All right. I don't know what I'll have seen. I'm definitely going to try and see Westworld, though, so hopefully we'll be able to talk about that. All right. I guess we'll be back next week, then.
Movie dudes.
Do 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 do.